is ESPN 97.5, brought to you by Zadda Jewelers.
KFNC 97.9 HD2, Mont Belvieu, Houston, a Gal Media station.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now back to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Key from L.A., Ray from Puka. Just a knee, Key. No, it's a big loss for the Rams. He's being a little quiet today, I've noticed.
Yeah.
1567, while on a date, didn't Watson have a girlfriend this whole time? Laughing face emoji?
Yeah.
One thing that I've learned about Deshaun Watson's girlfriend, she's ride or die. Like, she might be the most loyal woman that has walked the face of the earth.
You just wonder if she's getting compensated for it, too.
You're saying that she's being paid to be Deshaun Watson's girlfriend?
Quite possibly. Or at least that during the process that they made sure that she showed that loyalty and they made sure that it's a good look for them that they'll take care of her.
Yeah. I guess. but she's been riding shotgun for Deshaun Watson during all of this. She's either really, really loyal, or they have an open relationship, or she's really naive.
Or she's compensated.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, that to me is kind of weird, though. Like, paying somebody to be your girlfriend, that's like an escort.
Okay. And what is different from basically the massage escort type deal that Deshaun was trying to get?
We kind of know that's his thing.
Well, yeah, it's kind of his deal.
Like, they sued Deshaun. Like, she's
not, because she's getting what they don't have, the money.
Well, they did get money. They settled.
Some.
Didn't all of them?
No, I think there were
more. No, I think there was two or three holdouts.
Yep.
Two or three holdouts that didn't take the money?
Didn't want to get involved in the process.
I'd have to double check, but I believe two or three held out.
Yeah, I don't know if she's being paid to be Deshaun's girlfriend. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not. Look, I don't live that life. Like, I couldn't tell you, like, what that life is all about. I do not live that life, so I have no clue. Look, I think if the Astros season ended today, the conversation is no. If it ended today, because there is still time to change this narrative, there is still time to change the thought process with this. But if the Astros season ended today, not only should Verlander not get a playoff start, because it should be Fromber, Hunter Brown, Yusei Kikuchi, and Spencer Arrigetti, even Rene Blanco. Rene Blanco ahead of Verlander. I'd probably piggyback Arrigetti Blanco in a game four. I would probably start the game with Arrigetti. If he runs into some trouble, Rene Blanco, piggyback, try to get it late into the game. Verlander not getting a playoff start of the season into today. But on top of that, he shouldn't be on the playoff roster. On top of that, because, like, he doesn't give you any sort of value. When you look at this from a playoff perspective, and knock on wood, hopefully the Astros are in the playoffs, what value does he bring you if he's not making a playoff start? Like, he's not the Verlander of old where he has this nasty stuff. He's not really going to be a long reliever out of the pen. He might not even want to come out of the bullpen. You have six or seven other guys in the bullpen that you rather have pitch one inning over Justin Verlander. So, like, Verlander's, is he getting a playoff start? The question is he even on the playoff roster?
Yeah, I thought the same thing. The minute that I saw everything unfold last night, I started to question more and more about how he – and then when you heard the broadcast start talking about the fact that he doesn't want to come out of the – I don't know where they got that from, but that he – someone said he didn't want to, and someone else said – I don't think they used the word he can't. He can't come out of the bullpen because he's never done it before. Well, regardless, if it becomes an issue at all, then he isn't on the roster. And if he wants to unceremoniously do that to himself with that kind of look – and make it a public thing, go ahead. Otherwise, I could see the neck issue coming back or them spinning it to the fact that he is a medical issue. He's not going to be available, because I don't see, especially if they have to play that wild card series, I don't see a scenario where Justin Verlander is on the roster. Because like you said, whether Arrigetti was good or not, I'd go the reverse. I would start Blanco, and then I would use Arrigetti following him up, because Blanco, you know, could be capable of going deeper as well.
Well, why would you say that? I mean, Arrigetti's gone deeper into games than Blanco has, and Blanco has experience pitching out of the bullpen and did it the other day pretty nicely.
I guess it's a trust thing. I trust Blanco right now because of the last start from Arrigetti to give me five innings that's going to keep me in the ball game with minimal runs given up. Whereas I just don't know what I still don't know about Arrigetti, and he's never been in, you know, the playoffs before. That's me personally. I would do that. But either way, the piggyback is fine. But in a short series especially, I don't see where Verlander has a role. I don't think that he's – and let's just be honest, too. The stuff doesn't look like, no matter what role you might think is a scenario that could play out for him, that he's going to get guys out to where you believe when you do go to him that he's going to be effective.
Yeah, they were flipping out that he hit 94 yesterday on a ball that was hit 94. A spotter said, I would not bet against someone with that pedigree and how good this guy's been for a very long time. Back to baseball card, yep. Joe. I know that he's going to go back and work and try to figure some stuff out. The guy's been really good for a very long time. We talked about a couple things there in the dugout, some things he felt, some things he saw. He was looking at video. We have to go back to the drawing board, get him going. Verlander, 0-4, 9.68 ERA since coming off the IL. He said, I felt good physically. Obviously, the results were atrocious. Guys hit a lot of good pitches, though. And then Espada was talking about the vertical shape of the fastball, which he says isn't there yet. So he's getting the velo, but he's not getting the vertical shape. He says that's when you know JV's on, when you see the inches of vertical on his fastball. He's working through it, man. And I tweeted out yesterday what you said, too. I think that there will be an IL stint to save Verlander's pride, because I don't – like, right now, he's not on the playoff rotation. King of Twitch says, you really think JV is off the playoff roster? If I'm filling it out today, yes, absolutely. I think the Astros would leave him off of it, too, if they have the best interest in the Astros. And to save face, I think it's going to be Verlander to the IL, not feeling right. That neck is still flaring up on him. He's going to be on the injured list, like, with two games left in the season.
Yeah, no doubt. I could see that scenario playing out. I could see that being the kind of highest of high water you could take to make all parties feel okay going forward. And let's also not forget, you go series by series. He's probably going to be out for the wild card. Is there a chance, and as he's figuring things out, that as you get into a longer series, as you advance in the playoffs, that he might have a role? Sure. But I'm also not going to live on the back of the baseball card enough to say in a short series with the other guys I have to choose from that I'm going to force feed anything, Justin Verlander, anywhere in my pitching rotation.
T-minus says, I'm not going to be hard on JV. I'm not happy, but have not forgot what he has done for H-Town. Texter says, Verlander getting slandered on this program is so nasty. Let's show some respect. Look, you have to say what you see. And Verlander right now is not one of the best 12 pitchers in this Houston Astros organization. We're not slandering Justin Verlander. We're saying, in our opinion, Verlander is not going to be on the playoff roster. That's not that slanderous. We're not calling him a filthy animal. We're not calling him bad things. We're saying he's not very good right now. Why? Because he's not very good right now. Is he the greatest starting pitcher in Houston Astro franchise history? I personally think so. I get pushed back when I say that. Do I think he's one of the best 12 pitchers on the Astros currently? No, I do not.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. We're calling it like we see it. My honest opinion is the fact that right now, the way he's pitching, the stats you gave, the massive ERA, the 0-4 record since he came off the IL with the injury, that's not good enough. That would, if his name wasn't Justin Verlander and you put another player's name on those stats, he wouldn't have a role either. And the fact is that there's more consideration, and he's getting every opportunity because of the back of the baseball card and what this organization thinks of him. But at the end of the day, you got to do what's right for the rest of that roster that's in that locker room that's going to fight and wants the best pitchers they can possibly get to have the best chance to win. He doesn't give you the best chance to win right now, and until he figures out some things and those things are visible and they're effective and you're getting the results that you expect out of a Justin Verlander, that's not slanderous at all. That's not booing him when he walks off and everybody losing their mind about him being booed last night. That's being as honest and real as you can be about a guy that isn't who he used to be. And unless he gets some kind of signs that he's going to get closer to it, he can't pitch for this team and expect to win.
Now, him being booed is kind of wild.
Like, it was wild.
That is one thing where I'll agree with the texture. Like, I don't know if I would be booing Justin Verlander, who's won two Cy Youngs as a Houston Astro and has anchored the pitching staff of two World Series champions. That's probably a bit too far. Saying he shouldn't be on the playoff roster? Okay, yes. Booing him?
I said we're not booing him to say that we were just calling it like we
see
it.
No, I'm blaming the fans.
Yeah,
I'm
but at the same time, you do have, from regardless of back of the baseball card, just look at your memory book. I mean, the fact that he gave you the memories he's given you, the fact that he's in the conversation, as you mentioned, of being the greatest pitcher in Astros history, says you owe him a solid in that regard.
Yeah, it is sad. 75 says sucks seeing JV fall apart. It does. It really does. Double Rods, I mean, is anyone surprised he is 42? I think he's 41, but that's semantics. I wouldn't.
I'm surprised.
I'm surprised it's this poor. I thought he could have been the injury kind of throws a wrench into things, but I thought he would be pitching around a 4 ERA this year, based on what he did last year, based on his age, maybe the neck issues leading to some, you know, the inflated ERA, things like that. But I thought he'd be around a 4 ERA. I'm surprised it's been this poor, sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised from the standpoint of he didn't show signs. His velocity isn't, like, significantly less than it was, and especially pre-injury, coming off the Tommy John, he still has a plus fastball. His curveball can be, we were talking about last night as well, the fact that he didn't go to his curveball as much as he probably should have, and that curveball still had good movement and good vertical and drop and was placed in better spots. He has the capability, so I'm surprised that the results are this grotesque and absurd for a guy that's been this good for this long, no matter what his age says.
2971, he couldn't get anybody out at Sugarland, but that's the whole, oh, he's working on things that people overstate. 9501, if this was McCullers, people would agree. That is true. And then Verlander, not on the playoff roster, still gets a World Series ring. I think so, too. I don't think leaving Verlander off the playoff roster or not getting the most out of Verlander, I don't think that limits your potential. In fact, it might heighten it.
What do you mean, potential in terms of?
Like, said, I think the Astros have World Series potential.
Oh,
Verlander,
yes.
Verlander not pitching to his best, in my opinion, does not increase or decrease the chances of you winning a World Series. Oh. I think it's really a wash. If anything, it increases it because he can't be a bum and not get people out.
And the luxury is you have the benefit of what most teams don't, which is a surplus of even still with all the injuries they've incurred. You have 4 and 5 capable starting pitchers that you can actually use and utilize in the same way as Justin would have been in the mix, even with him out. Yes, you lose the experience, the playoff experience of Justin Verlander, but from a stuff perspective, you have guys fully capable of doing what Verlander's been doing for you at least this year and maybe more.
8835, I would pitch JV game 3 on the road, no questions asked. Fromber 1, Brown 2, JV game 3, Kikuchi game 4, Arrigetti not getting a playoff start. Blanco is the long arm emergency for all playoff games or spot start. Okay, I just don't trust Verlander.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't know how you can say that with confidence and believe that you got a chance to win that game 3.
2753, bad word, the memories, this ain't surprising. His golfing buddy Crane keeping him in that starting rotation. Now, I don't think that they've had a choice about keeping him in the rotation. Like, they went to a 6-man when he came back because they wanted to limit everybody's innings. So it's been beneficial that he's back, except when he's actually starting. But the fact that they went to a 6-man, I think, is beneficial to the entire rotation. And then I also think, like, dropping Blanco for a start, one turn through the rotation, I actually think that was good. So, mm-hmm. I don't think that Verlander is taking away from, like, the overall, you know, team other than when he pitches. And I actually think that him being part of the 5-man, 6-man rotation has been beneficial to the other guys, where I draw the lines the postseason.
Yeah, that's where I'm at, too, because before the injury, the fact is there, I think most people had confidence when he got the ball that he was going to be good, and there was a chance he could be even better as he got through the season and got more work and got stretched out and did all those things. We did not expect, I personally did not expect anything close to what I've seen since he's come back, and the fact that it's not even close to the confidence I used to have because of it. Mm-hmm. If this was starting a season and saying, does he fit in your rotation? You're not being force-fed. Yes, he belongs in the rotation. Now is a different story because of the results we've seen and the fact that he says he's healthy and feels good physically, that's where it becomes a bigger problem.
Yeah, hopefully he surprises us all and that he just nails, like, in the rest of his regular season starts, and then it's like, okay, now it makes sense. I just think that's a long shot. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Clarence, you're in the Hive of the Bees. What's going on, Clarence?
What's going on, boys?
What's up, Clarence?
All these people who are clamoring and begging for JV to be on the playoff roster after watching what we've just seen after the past 4 games are idiots, and they deserve to not watch baseball or even text this show again. And you know, this reminds me of, y'all remember when Peyton Manning had his neck injury and he wasn't what he was, and he had to lean heavily on the defense in order for him to win?
Yep.
I know it's a different sport, but that's what it's reminding me of. Like, JV, whatever neck issue is going on, and you know the nerves in the neck go down with the spine and all in the arms. I think it's something like that, and it's something that we're not – he say he feels good physically, but something about that just runs me the wrong way, and I would leave him off.
Appreciate the call, Clarence. Yeah, look, I mean, it's a good analogy. I think that we always talk about it because of Brady and what he did to buck the odds and do things differently than we've ever seen before. We don't know what Rodgers is going to be. We'll see a little bit of that tonight. But from a JV perspective, he's already done so much that you just expect him, like the kind of superhuman things he does. Like, he, you know, as he gets deeper into games and throws more pitches, his velocity used to go up all the time. It still can. You look at those things, and that's why you expect the unexpected of a guy his age. But at a certain point, when he starts putting on paper and on the diamond and recording things like we've seen over the last four games, you got to reevaluate. And as tough as it may be, and what you gave up to get him this go round, and all those things considered, your only consideration and concern is giving your team the best chance to win in the postseason. Right now, he doesn't do that.
It's also regressed. Like, he's made four starts since coming back from injury. In the first start, two runs, five innings, six strikeouts. Like, okay. Like, all right. That's all right. His second start at Philly, four runs, five innings. Okay. Like, Philly's good offense. You can kind of, like, you know, make an excuse there. Next start at Cincy, five runs, eight hits, four and two-thirds. That's when he walked the bases loaded. Last night, eight runs, eight hits, three innings. So, like, it's gone backwards. He's regressed since he's returned, which is odd. Like, he should be improving. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Richardson versus Stroud. Who won the fight at the quarterback position yesterday? It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I mentioned earlier in the show that I was walking around the neighborhood today. I was working out. And I saw a basketball goal laying flat on its side. It was embarrassing. It probably lowered my property value. Look, if you're going to get a goal, do yourself a favor and do your neighbor a favor and get a goal from Pro Dunk Hoops. They make the highest quality basketball goals you'll find, so you're going to be happy about that. Your neighbors are going to be happy about that. You're not lowering the property value of your neighbor's house. Plus, look, you're getting a goal because you want to play basketball, right? You want the best goal that exists. That's a goal from Pro Dunk. Tempered glass backboard gives you that true, authentic feel of the goals you see in the arenas, the big gyms. Breakaway rim, stainless steel hardware, and it's height adjustable, too. Anywhere from 5 feet to 10 feet. Lower it down, throw down some jams. Raise it up, work on your shot. And their new goal, Thor, you can raise and lower the goals with a drill. It's called their lightning adjust feature, anywhere from 5 feet to 10 feet in a matter of seconds. It's easy to do, and it's fun to do. Their accessories, next level. LED light kits for night play. The kids are in school. You're at work. Only time to play is at night. We'll get an LED light kit. Daylight savings right around the corner. It's going to be getting dark at 4:30. I'm kidding a little bit. Get those LED light kits so you can play in the fall. Backstop nets, pole pad lettering, and lots, lots more. And you can order everything, including professional installation online. That's right. You can order all of it. Plus, the pros from ProDunk, they're going to professionally install that goal at the perfect height, perfectly straight. It's idiot-proof for people like me because you're not doing it. The pros from ProDunk are doing it. Let them install as you sit back and watch sports. Call 281-351-9822 right now, 281-351-9822, and visit ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You found the Killer Bees, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
C.J. Stroud yesterday gets a victory over Anthony Richardson on the road. And just because C.J. Stroud's a second-year quarterback doesn't mean we're going to stop dissecting and analyzing his performance. We'll give a grade on Stroud later, and then we'll grade Stroud versus Anthony Richardson like it was a round in boxing. But what did you make of Stroud? How would you grade it?
Look, I think just simply from the fact that this is week one of year two, I was extremely happy with C.J. Stroud. You're always going to have throws you'd like to have back. You had some things that went his way that we talked about where the pick on the sideline was potentially something that, you know, was a throw he'd like to have back. But overall, we talked about the poise, his presence, his ability to make plays off script like the one on his knees on the logo. You know, the throw that he made to Nico to seal the deal inside of 2 minutes to go in the game on the sideline is a throw that not many make and put exactly where it had to be. I have nothing but more praise for the fact that you got the right guy as your quarterback, and he was impressive again yesterday to me.
Yeah, I thought he played really well, and I asked my Twitter followers, which are a lot of them, because I am an influencer, remember that, and I asked them just grade C.J. Stroud's performance, and like a lot of them were like B-, B. I thought it was like an A-. I would grade it at an A- with Stroud's performance yesterday. There were two careless throws. There were two throws that he was very careless with the football that could have easily been interceptions. One of them did get intercepted, but a defensive holding bailed it out. One of them that was caught by a defensive player that was ruled an interception that was overturned because he didn't get both feet in. So there were a couple of throws where he was very careless with the ball. There were a couple of underthrows. The Nico Collins great catch was an underthrow. You know, if he leads him, that might be six. There was an underthrow to Tank Dell. That could have been a big chunk play. But the off-script plays, the efficiency on third downs was insane. He also was highly effective. Like, they had 10 score. They had 10 possessions yesterday. They scored on six of them. One of them, they didn't score, was the final possession of the first half where they should have. And then the other one where they didn't score was whenever they bled the clock on the final possession of the game. So I thought he played a really good game on the road. I give C.J. Stroud an A- for his performance. What do you have it at?
Yeah, I was going to say, because of the fact that you can always say that there was a little bit more room to improve on that, I would go A-, but I don't think it was anything too critical to take him off the A list.
All right, Brian?
Yeah, no, make it unanimous. It's part of me wants to drop it down to a B+ because of those two picks that we talked about were made. If the guy doesn't step out of bounds, if the holding doesn't bail you out, then we're not giving him, you know, in the A letter grade if he's thrown two interceptions. But they didn't count in, like Joel pointed out, the poise when he went down to the knee when he slipped on the logo. The throw to Nico where Nico made the amazing diving grab. The one where he scrambled out, threw across his body to the middle of the field and nailed a pass to Nico in the middle of the field. He just pulled off so many plays, showed a level of poise that few other quarterbacks show in the NFL, especially for year two. And obviously, Jeremy, as you pointed out, he led the team basically, what was it? I think he said 6 out of 8 drives where you're not factoring in either bleeding out the clock or in the first half where they score points on the possession. So, yeah, I would give him an A-.
How about the opposing quarterback, Anthony Richardson?
Boy, I'll tell you what. You know, he had his moments, and everybody's going to, you know, completely lose themselves in the deep ball. He just showed to me and solidified the fact that he cannot throw accurately yet. I don't know if he ever will. As impressive as he is physically, his ability to run the football, his ability to be a weapon offensively is there. But because he can't make the throws, that some of them are very easy throws that he makes difficult, I think that, to me, he's B-, because of the fact that they had a chance to win the game, that they were still in the football game, that he did make some big plays. I'm not going to go lower than that, but I don't know in the foreseeable future if I'm going to be going higher than that either because of the fact he can't throw the ball.
Yeah, I think that Steichen needs to be creative with his usage. 4th and 1, Anthony Richardson dropping back to throw the football. Not wise. Like, I don't think you're winning football games. He was 9 for 19 yesterday. Now, he did have the big plays, obviously, and the one long touchdown is a play few people in life can make. I'd probably put it at a C+. I don't think he's accurate. I think he puts the ball in terrible places for his receivers, and the pushback's going to be, well, he had that long touchdown to Alec Pierce. Didn't you see that? Yeah, I did. Great play. Made that one. Thought it was kind of fluky. Derek Barnett drove the offensive lineman right into his face. He slipped, drifted, still made a great throw into the bucket for the touchdown. Now, look at some of the other plays. 4th and 1, Anthony Richardson with time slung it 10 feet over his receiver's head. That was that first possession when they turned it over on downs. Later in the game, Texans sent blitz. A.D. Mitchell wide open for an easy 6. What happened? 10 yards too far. Later in the game, had A.D. Mitchell again in the fourth quarter. Threw it over his head. Another one late in the fourth quarter. Overthrew him. Even his completions don't put his receivers in great catch and run spots. Like, he'll force his receiver to jump. So when he comes down, he's immediately tackled, as opposed to leading him, catch the ball, run after the catch. Now, he did have that one touchdown. So it's, like, very, very inconsistent with him. And then I even thought the interception was a bad throw. And you had the broadcasters, I forget which one said it, that said that the receiver slipped. I don't think so. I think he was lunging for the football because it was thrown too far in front of him that led to the Bullock interception. So I was not – I didn't like what I saw from Richardson. Yes, he's going to make the highlight play every now and then. I just think it's very difficult to win with that sort of inconsistency. I give that a C+. Grading it like a boxing fight, like a boxing round, probably got to go 10-9 for Stroud. So I get Stroud an A-, Richardson a C+, and then 10-9, Stroud wins the fight against Richardson.
Okay. I think it was, yeah, I'm going to go again, I'm not, Brian's our boxing judge, but I'm going to go with a little bit more of a differential between the two. I think CJ was head and shoulders above Richardson simply because of the throwing ability and because of the poise. I'm going to say 10-8.
Yeah, 10-8 was where I was at, and I'd grade Richardson at a C, so a little bit lower. I mean, the play where he hit Pierce for the bomb touchdown, obviously hit Pierce for another deep ball as well later in the game. I mean, they're great, but it's kind of like a bragging about a guy that hits 200 but runs into 20 home runs, you know, on the year. Like, he's a low percentage player. I mean, he had the one pick. He could easily have had three. There was the pass where Henry Toa tipped one up where Bullock would have been right there for it. And there was another one where they hit Azeez Al-Shaair in the hands and he just dropped it in the middle of the field where it seemed like Richardson never saw him. So, look, he had one pick. He almost threw three. He missed Adonai Mitchell deep multiple times, including one on the double move where Adonai Mitchell was just completely all alone. Another one where I think Stingley let him go, also completely all alone, threw it out of the end zone. Not to mention basically everything short to intermediate, 10 to 15 yards. He couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. He's a great athlete, and he's going to hit the home run plays, but I can't give him any better than a C.
3-3-3-8, CJ 1, no question. Defense made Richardson look way better than he is. 9 passes for 200-plus yards is a joke. Played on the defense that expected them not to throw much. I think that was part of the game plan. Force Richardson to beat you. He beat him a couple times. Didn't win in the game. 50-30 was a toss-up between Stroud and Anthony Richardson. I didn't see it that way. 0-1-1-3, CJ wasn't bailed out on that second pick. The only reason it had a chance of being a pick was because Moore pulled himself towards the ball using Schultz.
That is true. Stroud
didn't realize that.
No, he didn't.
Still was reckless with the ball. And you know that he didn't know that because of the way he went after him to try to tackle him. 50-30 again, Texans lose that game 50% of the time if you played it 10 times. I disagree. I think the Texans win 90% of the time. They dominated that game. Like, go look at the total yardage in that contest. The Texans outgained the Colts by 114 yards. The Texans were 7 for 14 on third down. Colts were 5 and 10. That's still a lot. You look at the turnover battle. Like, the Colts turned it over one time. Texans didn't turn it over at all. 40 minutes time of possession for the Texans, 20 minutes for the Colts. I think if you play that game 10 times, Texans win 9 of it. Don't forget the Texans had a block punt, too, that quickly led to a Colt touchdown.
The block punt and the gaff at the end of the first half tell you that you left points on the board or basically gave them 7 points in the case of the block punt, to where if you want to tell me you're going to do that again, you're going to play that game over and you're not going to do those things, I clearly thought the Texans were the more dominant team all game.
And then 5-7-9, I'm glad the Texans had such a balanced attack where Stroud didn't have to win it by himself. That is nice. Very nice luxury. Now, 30 times a game, I don't know if that's sustainable. But Mixon ran it obviously very, very well. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Keith, you're in the Hive with the Bees. What's up, Keith?
Hey, guys. Obviously Stroud is a better quarterback than Richardson, but to be so harsh on Richardson after one game when he has virtually no quality players in the short to mid-range spot.
Oh, come on. Michael Pittman's a stud.
Josh Downs is out. He's a slot receiver. Okay, they got no catches from the tight end. And behind Jonathan Taylor, there's no Nyheim Hines. There's no quality third down back. So in those three short-range positions where he can make those completions, he had nothing going yesterday. He didn't have the players in-house. There's no Jack Doyle. There's no Hines. Downs is out. A.D. Mitchell Pierce are deep guys, obviously. And Pittman was getting double coverage all game, it felt like.
Alec Pierce had 3 catches for 125 yards. Like, they had deep throws. Like, they were successful in deep throws. Part because of the Texans' game plan. Texans' game plan was, let's take away the middle. Let's try to force Richardson to stay in the pocket. Let's force Richardson to be accurate and beat us deep. And he hit a couple, and he missed a ton. Like, it's very game plan specific. And come on. Like,
part of why the tight ends had no catches is because Richardson couldn't throw it short and intermediate.
And they were targeted. Like, Mo Alley Cox targeted. Kyle Granson targeted. A.D. Mitchell overthrown 4 times. Pittman 8 targets. Caught 4 passes. Like, Pittman's a stud, too. Like, Pittman's really stinking good. So let's not say that he doesn't have, like, these Nyheim Hines. Like, Nyheim Hines changes that game yesterday.
Yeah,
Jack Doyle changes that game yesterday.
No. That's silly. I mean, Pittman had 1,100 yards the last couple of years with scrub QBs, including Gardner Minshew. It's not on Michael Pittman.
He's
a good receiver. Yeah. Richardson didn't hit him.
Keith was just being Keith, I think.
He dropped a Nyheim Hines.
Yeah.
I think that Jack Doyle was more offensive to me.
Jack Doyle, Nyheim Hines. All right, let's get to game balls. Who deserves a game ball from week one in the NFL? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word from our good friend Doc Linville and the good people that work for Doc Linville here in the Medical Center. They are absolutely fantastic. They do a ton of stuff. He does so many things, and he does it well. He does plastic surgery and spa treatments and Botox. The thing that I'm personally involved in that I had the procedure of the NeoGraft, I had the PRP treatments, and I can tell you they work. They both work, and that's the key thing here. You don't want to try things because you're desperate trying to get your hair back or stop your hair from falling out that are just going to mask the problem. And we've seen those on TV and all the different ways that people advertise the sprays, creams, and foams. This is stuff that actually works. These are procedures that actually are going to get your own hair back from you. It's not going to be taken from an artificial source. The phenomenal thing is, Doc, I had a free consultation with Doc and his staff that he explained to me, was the fact that you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head, no matter how bald you go in other areas. So through science and through medical technology, they figured out you can take some of that hair and use it like sod and repurpose it to where you need it most. It could be your hairline in front. It could be a bald spot up on top and back. But regardless, it's your own hair. They put it in such a way so that it grows the same direction and is the same color as the rest of your hair. And it's going to be there for the rest of your life because they're taking it from a spot where it never goes away. And that's a game changer. That's right there big. But then when you factor in the PRP too, where maybe you don't have to go full NeoGraft, maybe you have hair on your head. It's just not as thick and as strong as it used to be. It's like putting fertilizer on your lawn. You use the PRP treatments, and we've heard it in sports with athletes getting PRP on their knees and shoulders and joints. This is for your hair as well, and it can get that hair back to a stronger, more thick and lush form for you to get better coverage area and more hair on your head. Phenomenal both ways. The greatest thing about all this is you're listening to us, you're interested in him, you get a consultation like I had for free. It normally costs $150. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com, sign up for an appointment. You go in, they explain to you the procedures, you ask questions, they give you answers. You just figure it out and see if it's right for you. No signing on the dotted line, no financial commitments, nothing at all except for a question and answer, an explanation of what everything is, what they do and how they do it, and then the rest is up to you. If you want to do it like I did, I'm telling you right now, they're the best in the business, and I'd recommend them to anybody. Check them out today. Go to 975hair.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
5667, you taking Richardson or Levis at this point? I'll go Anthony Richardson over Levis. Give me Richardson. All right, game balls. Game balls, Blankers, do the honor. Who are you giving your first game ball the 2024 season to?
I hate taking this one from you. I felt like this was going to be your first choice, and I feel guilty doing this. But Josh Allen has
he was on
got
my list.
To get a game ball.
Yeah.
Four total touchdowns, two on the ground, two passing. He brought them back from coming from behind in coming from behind fashion. Showed toughness and grit with an injured hand. Got them a big victory.
He might be done. Might be done.
No,
with that
he's
left
playing
hand.
This we'll week. By the way,
we'll see how bad that left hand is. Yeah, I had him 1-2. I had him sixth on my list, but I did have him on my list
because of your disdain for him. I had him one.
No. Oh, okay. That's fair.
Yeah.
That sounds like a Branham move, so I actually admire that. Tyreek Hill. Like Tyreek Hill pulled his Scotty Scheffler. He went from detained to pay dirt. You kidding me?
And then he hit the handcuff celebration.
He did.
Yeah, and then was it Waddle that released him?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. How do we not give Tyreek Hill the top game ball? From detained to pay dirt, Tyreek Hill, game ball. Just be careful of your son's arm and, you know, that pregnant girlfriend you used to have in the past.
Which one? I think there
there's
four
been
at
multiple.
The same time.
The one in the belly and the stomach.
There was more than one at the same time, different women.
Well, I was said before the NFL. I think there was only the one then.
Oh.
All right, my first game ball goes out to, I think I'm going to call him Mr. Overtime right now, because David Montgomery, once the game went to overtime, just became an absolute beast. He was good during the regular portion of the game as well, but in overtime, David Montgomery of the Lions last night, of the eight plays, five were carries to Montgomery, gains 45 yards and just punches the ball down the Rams' throat and leading to the Lions' win. David Montgomery was awesome.
Yeah, he was good, and he wasn't much for most of the game, but like you said, when they needed him most, because their running game was fine without him early, But, man, when they needed him, he stepped up big. I didn't think the Lions were going to win that game. Credit to them for
Rams
winning that game.
Rams team was gassed.
Yep.
Lakers?
My next one goes to none other than Baker Mayfield. The fact that Baker Mayfield said that I play my best ball when I'm having fun, and I was having fun today. 289 and four touches, and they were putting up some good numbers from a Buccaneers offense that I didn't give a whole lot of stock in. Their line got a little weak and everything like that. But Baker for week one gets one from me for that those kind of numbers.
Yeah, I thought he was fantastic. Four touchdowns, my goodness.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one that got away if you're the Cleveland Browns, right?
For sure.
Yeah, so much for that Dave Canales storyline.
Oh, like you stalked down Dave Canales.
Oh, awful.
Baker didn't miss him a bit, and Bryce Young looks awful. Sam Darnold. Wasn't seeing ghosts yesterday against the Giants. He was seeing Giants, and Giants are something that he was feasting on. 19 for 24, 208, two touchdowns from Sam
I told
Darnold.
Y'all.
Yeah, that was one that, that was one that we should
New
take him back.
Going to be big, baby.
That was one we should, yeah, there was one of mine that you guys screwed us over, too.
It wasn't the Jets, but
yeah.
Still. I actually positioned it like that, but said, hey, you know what?
I do remember that, yeah. Because I was like, he wasn't with the Giants. But, I mean, same stadium. You're onto something, I guess.
Yeah.
My next one goes out to not J.J. Watt, but T.J. Watt, who was so dominant yesterday that the refs after the game had to apologize to him for calling him offsides because he was anticipating the snap count so well. They were calling him offsides, and the refs apologized to him after the game. He was a complete wrecking crew yesterday.
Yeah. More incompetence for the Falcons. They can't even get a snap count right.
Did he walk?
I'm worried about them.
And it was a walk-off sack fumble recovery to win the game?
I think that's right. I know he had a sack and a fumble recovery. I don't remember. I didn't see the end of the game, so I don't know if it was a walk-off.
I think it was a walk-off, yeah.
I want a Watt in Houston. All right, what's the next one you got, Blank?
I got Tua. I mean, you mentioned Tyreek Hill, but Tua, coming off his contract, 338 yards in the air. He led the comeback. They were bad in the first half, really good in the second half. They said he gave the team a big pep talk and was shouting out and calling out veterans that they got to play better. Now that he's got the contract, maybe he's got the confidence, but 338 and a win for Tua.
Yeah, good. I didn't think that was going to go very well. I thought the AFC South was going to be 3-1 yesterday with the only loss coming in division. Like, Jacksonville started hot, Tennessee was up big, and then all of a sudden.
They both were up 17-0 or 17-3, I think, in the first half.
Yeah, Sounds right.
Yeah.
I even had it in my notes. AFC South, strong week one. And it was like, I guess I Branham foot and mouthed it. Derek Carr, David Carr's brother. I mean, who saw this coming? 19 for 23. The yards weren't really that big because it was garbage time. They threw for three touchdowns. Like, all this talk into the season, like, oh, Spencer Rattler is going to take, and he still might, is going to take Derek Carr's job. All Derek Carr did was hang up a huge number three touchdowns in week number one. Derek Carr, not dead yet.
Didn't see that one coming and having them playing as well as they did. But the other thing is Derek Carr, Mr. kind of close to the vest, Mr. conservative. I don't know if you saw that or not, they have the video of it. But Horn Jr. in the secondary was all over talking mess to him. And he turned right around to him and he goes, I got three on you, bro. I got three on you. Touchdowns. I was like, good for you, Derek Carr.
My next one goes out, another one on the defensive side of the ball, and part of this was because it was fun to watch him sack Deshaun Watson, but Eric Kendricks of the Cowboys, 9 tackles, 2 sacks, and interception yesterday, and the Browns just absolutely dominant win over the Cleveland Browns, made Watson look every bit as bad as Bryce Young and some of these other trash QBs we've talked about today, so... shout out to Eric Kendricks.
Let's do one more real quick, and then we'll get to the Texas game.
My last one is J.K. Dobbins. J.K. Dobbins
coming off
another major injury. Not many people believed in him, thought he could do anything for a Chargers team that was looking for a replacement for Eckler, and he got 135 and a touch and looked really good doing it.
RB1, Gerard Mayo, first game as a head coach, replacing a legend in Bill Belichick. All he does is go into Cincy and beat limp-wristed Joe Burrow in the Cincinnati Bengals.
Tariq Woolen, the defensive back from the Seattle Seahawks. Did you guys see the call of Adam Archuleta when he picked off Bo Nix?
No.
There was when Tariq Woolen picked off Bo Nix to basically end the game, as soon as Bo Nix lets it go, you hear Adam Archuleta over the broadcast go, oh, no, because Bo Nix was throwing it right to where Tariq Woolen was. But big play there from Tariq Woolen to help them also make a comeback. They were down at halftime, but Seattle gets the win over Denver.
Quick through the text line here, HRP listener line. Saquon Barkley, absolutely great game for Saquon. As soon as I saw Tyreek was detained before the game, I knew he was going to smoke the Jags secondary like a free joint. 2568. The Bears gave their game ball to Will Levis. That's a good point. That was a terrible play by Will Levis. 8835. Game ball, Bears defense and special teams. Yeah, Jonathan Bias scored the touchdown.
He did.
Yeah, Space City Cav, I'm giving my offensive game ball to Mixon, my defensive game ball to Kalen Bullock. That's fair. He had a pick. Mm-hmm. Key from L.A., my game ball goes to Cooper Kupp and Joe Mixon. No surprise, Cooper Kupp. I don't hand game balls to losers like Cooper Kupp.
And if you're going to do anybody on that team, freaking Stafford carried him the whole night.
Kupp was pretty awesome,
though. You see Collinsworth's call,
awesome,
by the way?
Yeah, but he's a loser. Lost
game. Week one, and Collinsworth calls it the throw of the year?
Oh, yeah, that was funny.
Come on, man.
He also forgot the overtime rule.
He did?
He was talking about being positioned for the field goal and, like, taking a knee.
I missed that.
Yeah, and then Tirico was like, well, you know, if they don't score a touchdown, the game rolls on. And then Collinsworth was like, well, of course they're looking for a touchdown here, trying to walk it back, but it was too late. 2180, Jayden Daniels looks like an elite running back. I didn't see much of that game yesterday. I was watching Red Zone Channel. He fumbled four times.
I didn't see it at all.
I saw four fumbles on it on the box score today. He says, can't throw worth a dang, but good runner. As a Texans fan, I'll also give a game ball to William Mayo Boy Levis, best player the Bears had. So a lot of
I mean, Caleb Williams threw for 90 yards if they won.
Yeah, I know.
That's great. Yeah,
Levis was awful.
The gif was like there was two big guys that were carrying something really valuable and a third guy that was just kind of walking alongside of it. And they're like, the guy walking alongside of it's Caleb Williams. He gets credit for a W and is a part of the team, but he didn't do much.
Yeah. Williams with those painted nails, orange.
She came into the game with gloves on.
I didn't.
Because people were wondering if he had you know, done anything to his knuckles like he did against Utah. And he came into the game wearing black leather gloves.
He's a weird guy. All right, let's get to our car wreck of the day. What are you nominating for the car wreck of the day? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
You prick. Where's my money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
All right. Car wreck of the day. 713-780-3776. What are you nominating, Blinkers?
I think the obvious one is Justin Verlander. He was atrocious. He said it himself. And the fact that he felt good physically made it even worse. So I think that has to lead us off completely, a Justin Verlander meltdown.
Yeah, that was brutal from Verlander. I'll give the Will Levis pick six and the Bryce Young game my two noms. What you got, Brian?
I've got two noms here. One, we mentioned it earlier, Shedeur Sanders completely throwing his team under the bus. We don't have time for the full quote, but it's out there. He was asked about protections or not playing well. He's like, well, Dylan Raiola didn't get touched. How did he do? Just completely threw his offensive line, and later in the clip throws his running back under the bus as well. And the other one, if you didn't see it, I'm gonna throw under the bus one of my own. Colt McCoy on the call of Nebraska-Colorado made Tom Brady look like the greatest broadcaster of all time. Colt McCoy was brutal. I don't want to see him again. That saddens me to say as a Longhorn legend.
Yeah, no one saw that coming.
And then I had another one too. Colin Cowherd. Not that we don't all make these kind of mistakes when picking games. Colin Cowherd was adamant that the Panthers were going to dust the Saints and win outright and cover the spread. And neither.
Yeah, you'll hear that one Thursday for sure. That was bad. Alex, car wreck of the day, Collinsworth, the whole, maybe all of it, but the overtime stuff. Chewy says NIU radio announcer. Car wreck doesn't like happiness and celebration and joy like Casario, I guess. 50-10. Car wreck of the day was the debacle going into the half of the Texans game. Good call.
True.
6967 and 4492 say Deshaun Watson. Good call.
Yep.
9229, I nominate myself for car wreck of the day. I texted in last week saying Levis and the Titans were highly underrated, so he nominated himself. I admire that. And then another Deshaun Watson from Josh from Seabrook. What do you think should win here?
I think it's localized. I think it's Verlander.
Verlander.
Really?
Yeah.
On a football Monday?
Yeah.
I got outvoted, so it sounds like you already picked Verlander. That's fine. So Justin Verlander, car wreck of the day. Congratulations, you got a win. Doesn't count to the 300, though. All right, that's it for us. Thanks to Brian. He's Blank on Brian. And the Boss and the Gloss season debut coming up right now.
Warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.